Hi everybody. Welcome to the live retail online integration webinar, 10 Merchandising Best Practices for Today's Omnichannel Retailer, sponsored by MarketLive. My name is Melissa Campanelli, and I'm the Editor-in-Chief of Retail Online Integration and the host of today's event. As any retailer knows, a merchandising strategy can make or break a company's sales, profits, and success. So what are some best practices around it, especially for omnichannel retailers who have to make sure their marketing strategies are well executed as well as integrated across channels? In today's webinar, our marketing experts will discuss key online and offline merchandising best practices and strategies. Attendees will take away best practices around merchandising, how to make sure your merchandising strategies are integrated online and offline, and what not to do when it comes to merchandising. Today we're going to discuss making sure your offers meet your customers' needs, the importance of cross-selling, upselling, and bundling, how to use segmentation to personalize the in-store and online experience for your customers, optimizing search and navigation for discoverability, and so much more. Our speakers today are Kathleen Schultz, Principal at Kathleen Schultz Marketing, and Leslie Han, Senior E-Commerce Strategist from MarketLive. And you'll learn more about them during the webinar. Before we get started, however, let me point out a few quick tips on how to make the most of today's live event. First, if you have any technical difficulties, troubleshoot by clicking on the help widget at the bottom of the console marked with a question mark, or let us know via the Q&A box. You can also use the Q&A box to submit your questions to today's panelists. We'll be addressing select ones at the end of the hour, but you can send them in at any time. Also, please turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can use all of the widgets on this console. Also, remember your console is interactive, so click on the Tips for Attendees widget below to learn how you can customize your experience today. With that, I'd love to introduce Kathleen Schultz, who's here to discuss merchandising best practices. Take it away, Kathleen.
Thanks, Melissa. So, what is merchandising? Merchandising refers to the variety of products for sale, the display, and the presentation of those products, as well as determining the appropriate pricing that will achieve your margin goals and appeal to your target customer. Whether your product is being offered online, in-store, or in a catalog, it's all about merchandising. I like to say merchandising is all about this stuff, with the goal being to stimulate interest and entice customers to purchase. When applying some of the same merchandising tactics online as you would in store, you can provide an experience worthy of a purchase, a repeat visit, and hopefully a long-lasting relationship. Now let's review our 10 merchandising practices. But first, let me tell you a bit about Kathleen Schultz Marketing. Kathleen Schultz Marketing is a strategic marketing firm assisting online, brick-and-mortar, and catalog companies. Our mission is to assist companies in the development of and the achievement of their omnichannel merchandising strategies. Our expertise is focused on development, validation, and execution of strategic plans, merchandising strategies in support of brand positioning, business opportunity research and development, assortment planning and pricing, and merchandising organizational structure. Our clients have included companies in the apparel, food, home furnishings, gifts, and floral categories, to name a few. So tip number one, we all need to remember that the customer rules and is channel agnostic. Today's customer wants to shop however, wherever, and whenever they please, and it's the merchandising role, as well as everyone else at your company, to make that experience as seamless and as effortless as possible. Today's customer wants access to all products within all channels, and they have more options, information, and research tools to help them with their journey. Customers are pushing retailers to improve the shopping experience, and retailers can't distinguish themselves on price or availability alone. While omnichannel has matured recently, I find there's still a siloed approach within many retail and brand organizations, which is resulting in a gap between consumer expectations and the actual shopping experience. In fact, according to Forrester Research, 74% of retailers believe they have a digital strategy in place, but only 34% of executive management think it's the right strategy. Tip number two, the importance of your brand. If you take away one thing from my portion of today's presentation, it is that you always, always be sure your brand is consistent and clearly communicated. A key to a successful omnichannel business is a consistent brand image within all customer interactions. You need to know who is your current customer and what are they buying, who is your targeted customer and what do they want or need from you, who is your competition and how do they compete with you? Is it in assortment? Is it in price? Is it in customer service? And what makes you different? Some well-known brands such as Williams-Sonoma and L.L. Bean, as well as some lesser-known brands such as Legendary Whitetails and Making It Big, are great examples of businesses that are consistent in their brand positioning, whether that be a specific category of business, a la cooking-related product, like Williams-Sonoma, or a niche customer, whitetail deer hunters, like Legendary Whitetails. Some businesses try to separate the brand site from the shopping site, but these elements need to blend. You always want to speak to your customer with one voice. Having your offers, sales, and promotions available across all channels is a must in support of consistent brand imaging. For customers, omnichannel means having a seamless brand experience regardless of how they access your brand. Tip three, I just mentioned consistency with your offers, sales, and promotions across all channels. This consistency should also encompass pricing. This sounds simple, but with the urge to offer the deal of the day on your site, what do you do in store and in your catalog? Here's where great communication comes into play. In-store awareness of the deal is critical, so then when a customer comes in and says, they've seen a product online at X price, the associates aren't surprised, but are rather ready to say, of course. In catalog, which is a stagnant medium, letting your phone order takers or customer service folks aware of this deal of the day. They can also use it as an add-on to a phone order, as many currently do today. Now, how can you get customers who are already buying from you to spend more money and therefore increase your average order value? Some boosting average order value strategies may distract or even alienate some customers, causing them to abandon your site. So here are some strategies that work for you to consider. Be relevant. Related products are a natural cross-sell. Introduce upsells and cross-sells early on in the shopping journey. Product pages are the place to offer accessory items, improvements, and helpful advice. And, of course, recommendations such as people who bought this also bought or people who view this also viewed. Remember, the shopping cart is not the end of the shopping journey. So don't be afraid to offer relevant cross-sells, keeping them in the buying mode. In-store, this could be offering impulse items at the register. Online, you can be more direct by showing specific items that relate to the specific item in the customer's cart. For example, a baking pan is in the cart. How about a cookbook? Or a jacket is in the cart. How about a coordinating scarf? You know what I mean. Bundling related products on your product page and offering a discount. So think of bundling as a cross-selling at a discount. But remember, checkout is sacred. So leave it alone. Don't distract customers when they're at this page and checking out. It's prudent not to risk the entire sale on the chance that they may buy one or two more items. Tip number four. Too much use of sale is not a way to fight competition. Exclusive, proprietary product that hits your margin goals is a key success factor. This approach can be easier with soft goods, like Making It Big or Bella Bliss, but there are opportunities with hard goods to get a product as your exclusive for a given time frame. A good example is Williams-Sonoma. They recently introduced a new line of all-clad cookware designed for them by Thomas Keller, the owner and executive chef of the French Laundry, one of the five restaurants, top restaurants in the country. A really great limited-time exclusive, and all Williams-Sonoma customers know of Thomas Keller. Optimize your inventory based on customer behavior. What do they buy, and what do they want? You know what they're buying, but do you conduct customer surveys asking your customer what else they would like to see? Accurate inventory is a key omni-channel strategy, so be sure your demand planners play a key role in leveraging inventory across all channels to ensure you're not out of stock. Implement ship from store before in-store pickup. According to Forrester Research, retailers are experiencing upwards of 20% or more online revenue growth with ship from store. Remember, the quickest way to lose both a customer and a prospect is to be out of stock. Most people are busy, and when they shop, they're looking, especially online, for something specific. If you don't have it in stock, they go elsewhere, and you may lose them not only for this sale, but for the purchase forever. Make it effortless for your customer and enable product ordered online to be returned to your store. This is not only good customer service, but positions you for another purchasing opportunity. On a personal non-online experience but relates to customer service, my husband received a shirt from J. Crew as a holiday gift and went to exchange it at our local J. Crew store and was told that it came from one of their outlets. They don't take outlet returns, and he needed to return it to one of their outlets, which the closest one to us is 50 miles away. Not good. Poor customer service and a missed sale opportunity. You want your in-store service to match that found online. So share credit for both sales and returns between online and in-store. No siloing. You're one company with common goals to service your customers, be profitable, and grow. And don't over-assort. Customer satisfaction is oftentimes lost when you're offering too many styles, too many SKUs. Can you really keep inventory levels where they need to be? Or are you deleting offerings from your site, store, and catalog early on within the shopping journey? Tip five, product presentation. Basic assortment planning and merchandising is often getting lost amid all the wonderful technology in the e-commerce space. And it's a combination of art and science. The art being the artist, the right brain, the idea. Visual, creative, visionary, knows the customer, excellent communication are some words that describe the art of merchandising. The science being the number cruncher, the left brain, the analytics. Numbers and data-driven, logical, methodical, financially responsible are some words that describe the science of merchandising. Many online businesses suffer from over-assortment. Within in-store environments, the assortment is limited by space. Within catalogs, The assortment is limited by paper, printing, and posting costs. These traditional limits don't exist in the same way online, but don't let yourself get trapped with offering everything unless you're Amazon, and you don't want to make money. Merchandising is where the retailer focuses or limits their assortment on behalf of the customer needs to be a priority. Be easy on the eyes. Just as a store design and layout is a major element within all in-store environments, you want your online store to be visually appealing and easy to navigate. You don't want to confuse the customer, causing them to leave your site. Continuing with product presentation, customers love the in-store experience because it allows them to manipulate product as they see fit, investigating every angle, every nook, every cranny. Online, what can you do with your product to replicate this experience? Present products in a more compelling way. It will improve your conversion rate and increase your average order value. Popular options are alternate views, Zoom, color changes, and video. You have a non-static channel. Use it to get sales. Use your online channel to test new products, new vendors, new price points. And be bold. The consumer wants you to be the voice of authority. Use testimonials. Tell a story why your product is the best. As an online merchandiser, site placement decisions are based on customers' insights and data gathering, not based on selling off slow-moving product. This is where the art comes in. Know who your customer is. Testing new product categories can be risky, but you can mitigate that risk by introducing products on your site first to see if they fly. But they need to be natural, relevant outgrowth of your current product assortment. If you're currently selling shoes, don't start selling pots and pans, but rather an option may be in apparel-related accessories. Marketing productivity is tied to merchandising tactics, and those who measure merchandise productivity learn more about the health of their business, what price points need to be contracted, what price points should be tested for expansion, and the same for categories. Are margin goals being achieved? And the list goes on. This is where the science comes in. So let's review some product presentation placement tips. Merchandise hierarchy should be the basis for shopping and navigating your site. And I suggest the following. Levels being division, department, class, style, SKU, sorts being brands, price, colors, feature examples being new, bestsellers, customer favorites, exclusive, sale, to name a few. Your homepage is the front window of your store or the front cover of your catalog, and many websites try to do too much on their homepage. Too many messages creates confusion. Where and what should the customer be looking at? They don't know. I believe too many messages on the homepage is the biggest misstep an online business can make. Your first message on your homepage should illuminate what your brand positioning is. What makes it unique? What's your unique selling proposition? Is it your product category? Are you a price leader? Are all of your products private label and not available elsewhere? Some things to think about. Your second message communicates what's going on right now, what's compelling for your consumer. You're introducing the fall collection, you have 35 new products, and your final most important feature is shopping. Where and how do they get to the product? Product must be hero. Again, it's all about the stuff. Nothing is as important as showing the product, qualifying features and benefits, and, of course, the price, all clearly to the customer. Here is where the customer is ready to buy but may need some additional info. Some suggested tools that help are compare products, recommendations of similar products, suggest add-on items, and customer reviews. On these pages, the customer is in essence in the store or flipping through a catalog, but with added details to support additional purchasing decisions, leading to additional revenue opportunities. Tip 6, storytelling. Through our online day-to-day activities, we're all immersed in conversations, stories, news, social networking, entertainment, and the like. But interactive engagement has been missing from most online shopping experiences until rather recently. Hence, the rise in storytelling in relationship to product selling. Storytelling appeals to the consumer's emotional side and is needed to improve the consumer experience and conversion. Storytelling adds context to products to help consumers imagine how the product will work for them and which products work with others. Unlike the static catalog that delivers product facts, online retailers have implemented rich media, personal suggestions, and demonstrations of how items work together. Online is a company's best sales associate when offering a range of information at an instantaneous speed and getting the consumer to buy. So in conclusion, what is merchandising? Merchandising is a blending of both art and science, the idea and the data. And it should stimulate interest and entices the consumer to purchase. It makes the experience effortless. It should have a consistent brand positioning and pricing. Is relevant, unique, and exclusive. It measures productivity. Focuses on products, the customer service, and the numbers, the result being relevance and profit. And let's not forget my favorite quote from Stanley Marcus, former CEO of Neiman Marcus. You achieve customer satisfaction when you sell merchandise that doesn't come back and a customer that does. And now, continuing with tip 7, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Leslie Hahn, who is Senior E-Commerce Strategist with MarketLive. Leslie?
Thank you, Kathleen. Appreciate that. So before we continue with the rest of our time here together today, I actually just wanted to take a minute and talk about getting really anchored in the science and the art of why we buy. You know, it's amazing to me as I work with just incredible merchants, incredible e-commerce sellers across the country, how often we get caught up in the platform, the technology, the latest and greatest widget, and forget fundamentally what is the science and why do we buy? Why does someone ultimately make that decision to purchase your item or not purchase your item? And the answer to that is actually not in your Google Analytics. It's not in your buying calendar, and it's not in your flow-through plan. So think just for a couple minutes about how you browse, how you shop, and how you make decisions in a brick-and-mortar experience. Because amazingly enough, you know, in terms of our conversion data, we might be happy with a conversion rate online of 4% or 5% would be so amazing. But in juxtaposition, most brick-and-mortar experiences, our traditional retailers, have an average retail store conversion at 30%. So clearly, there's something in that environment for us to translate over into the online environment to increase our ability to sell effectively. So many of you have probably stopped and shopped or been consumed at IKEA. IKEA is a fantastic example of really kind of the epoch of merchandising. You know, as you go into the store, you're kind of a salmon in the stream. They put you through these amazing collections of all the furniture put together, and you're like, oh, this is amazing, versus being put at the end of the store where it's huge pylons of semi-disposable furniture in cardboard boxes. Well, this is part of the IKEA genius. and something that the executives cite as the primary driver for their sales. It's not their product. It's how they merchandise. So an equivalent to that would be how you do collections or kitting on the site. All right, so let's talk a little bit about floor plan. So as you're going through your IKEA or your physical store, or if you don't have a physical store, perhaps a competitor's physical store, think about how the zones are arranged. You know, one of the questions that I'll get a lot when we're in the process of replatforming a client is, you know, what do I do with my navigation and how do I sequence it? Well, really, you know, how would you sequence it if it was a physical store? Because this really comes down to the fundamentals of merchandising. You know, what are you going to lead with from left to right, from top down, as if you're going through the store? You know, your tables at the very end, where would you put your salesperson if you were creating a physical store? The search bar is a big one, and for our customers that have, you know, tens of thousands of SKUs, that search bar is more and more prominent, just as if you were going into a store, you would want to have that salesperson up front because it's going to be so much more difficult for the customer to successfully navigate such a large product assortment. So when you're figuring out how to create this merchandising experience and you're thinking about your salesperson, this is ultimately where you would want to put your search bar in your user interface and UX design. Internal site search. This is your star salesperson. And interestingly enough, Omniture recently put out a report that suggests that over 50% of online shoppers prefer search to your navigation. So even if you've done a beautiful job laying out your zones or your navigation on the site, you know, you have a large propensity of customers that aren't going to want to use your navigation at all and are going to go direct to search. So that's a critical point, even when you have a small product assortment, is thinking about how is that internal search experience going to propel the user into a conversion. And this is something at MarketLab we actually excel at. The term that I like to use for it is searchandising, because you're not just providing a search result. In your search result, you are providing a merchandising presentation, because you're finding that delicate balance between all the relevant results and also controlling the product appearance and sequence. You know, as you're going through the search results, you don't necessarily want the one that is the closest as it relates to letters or characters, but what is the one you want them to see the most? And that becomes incredibly important when you're doing your searchandising. I want to talk, too, specifically about the homepage, because this is something that comes up a lot. And, you know, we have so many choices as it relates to just being able to wake up in the morning and put a graphic on our homepage and be able to see what it does by the close of business today. What do you put up there? Well, the bottom line from a merchandise perspective, and Kathleen has already talked about this, is it's your store window display. And finding that balance with what would be the most optimal store window display if you had, for example, a physical location in a mall that would engage the user and convert them the quickest. So with this, right, so the nuance is that as technologists and as online merchants, we have way more things to play with than a physical merchandiser does. And it's so easy to get caught up in the technology, but don't, because here's ultimately how it looks. A slider, right, so your modern slider on a website, is just the facilitation for that user to stand in one place and have the store sequence the windows in front of them. Love it. Your tiles, right, so what do I put in the tiles? Do I put my promotions? Well, what would you put in the little windows of a store? And then parallax specifically, which is very hot, is really it's creating a story with the actual animation and sequencing of the windows, very similar to like a really amazing FAO Schwartz window in the Christmas time, right? It's not only the toys, but it's how the toys interact. So when you're using your store window, do not use store window for a price story with no product. This is a really big turnoff. And unless someone is already familiar with your product, you're going to really see a decline in new user conversion. Similarly, do not dictate or do not create an in-store window completely about an arbitrary collection with no concept of price or product, because would you walk into a store that just had a pretty picture if you didn't know, could you afford the price point and was the product of interest to you? I mean, this is fundamentals, but yet somehow, again, as modern merchants, we forget this when we get caught up in the technology amazement of what we have to play with. Do create a store window, your homepage, with the price story and the product. And ideally, integrate that with your categorical navigation. You know, we have the ability now to have amazing amount of functionality within a single graphic, and that extra time makes a big difference. Another key piece to this, which is a huge miss in a lot of homepage graphics, is creating any urgency. So, you know, we've seen this kind of this big pop-up culture evolve of, you know, sign up now if you want 10%. Well, why not include that sense of urgency in our homepage graphics, right? So if you want this sale, you want this product, you need to go now. I want to talk briefly about cross-sell, upsell, and downsell, just some basics. I know Kathleen kind of already covered that, but specifically as it relates to downsell and creating this physical merchant environment online. I don't know if there are any Fry junkies on the call today, but I was interesting in my research about really people that do the best job, best in class with cross-sell, that one of the examples is actually McDonald's. And French fries accounts for, you know, roughly 35% of their sales. So would you like fries with that? Yeah. And think about what the equivalent of that would be on your site. Upsell, downsell, obviously selling them up. But one of the biggest misses that we see in our consulting practice is actually the downsell. You know, as merchants, and we want to really protect that margin of like, no, I can't try to sell them down. But if you think about it, if they're coming in and the product is too big or too expensive, your choice is sell them down or lose the sale. And that really is up to you. An interesting case study that was actually conducted by a scientist at Stanford University named Paco Underhill, who wrote The Science of Why We Buy, has to do with placing a shopping basket halfway through the store. So if you've been at like Cost Plus, for example, or Target, you'll find that halfway back through the store, just at the point where you're really starting to get a number of items in your hands that you didn't think you were going to buy, that they have started to place shopping baskets. And this was based on research showing that customers would rather put down the items than travel all the way back to the front of the store, that they would abandon their shopping experience instead of making that extra effort to walk that couple extra feet to go to get a shopping basket. But this is a really important concept, especially when you're figuring out how to increase your conversion and your merchandising strategy as it relates to your cart, persistent cart, Ajax cart, express checkout, and breadcrumb navigation. Are you being sure that the customer knows where they're anchored, why they are in the shopping basket experience? So now we have someone at our point of sale. Awesome. Love them. We've worked hard to get them there, certainly with all of our merchandising practices. And yet, it's the equivalent of walking up to a counter, putting your items on the counter, and not asking for the sale. So we have all this ancillary content about, would you like to join our email list? Would you like to get a Visa card? You know, would you like to sign up for this or that? No. You just want them to buy. And so to go back and revisit your, you know, essentially the beginning of your checkout funnel, and are you asking for the sale? Are you moving them down the funnel? Closing the sale. You know, this is something we have a couple webinars coming up to prepare our clients for this rigorous holiday season. And one of the items is that we're going to be talking about is just closing the sale because you know, this is really where your guarantee comes in. This is where is your promise that if that item doesn't work out, that my person can send it back without any issues. You know, it's what J. Crew needs to do, which is, you know, being sure that if someone makes that purchase, it's going to be supported multi-channel. So real quick, because we're very action-oriented over here at Market Live, we like to talk about concepts and then how to put it into action for our clients so we can assist and support them in creating conversion results. If you have some time, I would highly suggest that you go stalk some Shoppers and read The Science of Why We Buy by Paco Underhill. Again, you know, unless you're really, really clear about how someone physically purchased your product, you know, this is definitely something well worth your time to revisit. Benchmark your merchandising KPIs before you start any big kind of initiative, whether that's merchandising or conversion acceleration or mobile optimization. And I jokingly with my clients will say, and don't forget to pre-negotiate your bonus based on performance because we want you to be successful. And then you're going to approach your store like a store, systematically, instead of being dictated by functionality or the newest gadget, from your window, your zones, your salesperson, because now you're so excited about internal search, I just know it, your product context, which is your description all the way through your cross-sell, would you like fries with that, your upsell and your downsell, being sure that they don't leave, instead they buy a product on your site, and then from a POS perspective, the checkout funnel, being sure that you're closing the sale by asking for it and that you have a guarantee that creates a reason for them not to leave. Now, briefly, I'm just going to take 2 minutes to talk about Market Live. We are an e-commerce platform with over 18 years of retail experience, and we manage over $1.5 billion in online sales. So to say that we have some expertise in optimizing sites is probably pretty humble. We do provide strategy services and expertise as part of our e-commerce platform, and that technology is something that serves and optimizes the customer experience multi-channel as well as multi-device. In terms of where we are, we tend to beat industry average growth. This is something that we monitor very closely, especially as we're moving into the holiday season, to be sure that our clients not just get through the holiday season, but they exceed the industry average. And then we also have received a number of technology awards. Credibly holistic in terms of how we approach things. We are an end-to-end, top-to-bottom solution, totally integrated across everything that our clients need, the idea being that we want to make it as easy as possible for them to be successful. And lastly, here are some of our clients that we absolutely love to work with. We have a great time doing what we do as part of the e-commerce Market Live family. So that's what we've put together for you today. I know Kathleen is going to talk a little bit about Kathleen Schultz Marketing.
Thanks, Leslie. Well, I am a senior executive with three decades of omnichannel experience in merchandising, strategy, assortment planning, and creative positioning. I have been on the client side in senior management positions with startup businesses such as Branders.com, Calyx and Corolla, Duty Free Shops, FLM Chocolates, Smith & Noble, and my consulting clientele includes a variety of categories of business, Artful Home, Belk Department Stores, Bella Bliss, Catalog Spree, to name a few. And you can see on this presentation slide how to contact me, and I would love to talk with you about your merchandising challenges. So thanks very much for joining us.
Excellent. Well, thank you both for some great information. I'm sure a lot of this information will be really helpful, especially as the holiday season is coming up for our listeners. I want to remind the listeners that we're happy to take questions. We have about 15 or so minutes here, so please send them in, and we'd be happy to answer them. We have some great experts on the phone here, so it's a good chance for you to get some questions answered. But in the meantime, I do have some questions for you that came in over the wires during the pre-registration process. So I'm going to start with those, and I think I'm going to open it up with Kathleen. And one of our attendees wanted to know if you have any best practices around or if there's anything sort of different or new about presenting new merchandise to customers online versus the traditional, you know, mix. Do you have any comments there?
Yeah. New merchandise to customers online, you know, I think it's a question of calling out. You can certainly call out that information that you've got X number of new products online on your homepage. You should, another area where you have an opportunity to have that be a feature in your hierarchy, and then certainly also, excuse me, on your actual product pages within categories, you know, it would be beneficial to put some sort of flag associated with specific products that are within all the other products that you have on a page that are new. Those might be three different options.
That's great. Let me see some of these other questions.
I want to add to that real quick.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sure.
No, one of the great ways, because I'm a big believer in retention strategy and taking care of those that take care of us, is, you know, your seasoned customers that have been loyal to you, they love sneak peeks. They love to see product before anybody else. And that's something that we've kind of integrated into some email marketing programs for our clients that really, I mean, it really creates a lot of loyalty. It's saying to the customer, oh, okay, we're special to you. We get to see things first. We get an opportunity before other customers, and they really resonate with that.
Great, yeah. I'm sure you guys both have a lot of experience looking at a lot of different types of websites and promotional strategy. So I'm sure you guys have some great ideas there. And given that, are there anything in general, and this can go to Kathleen, are there any things that you're seeing on e-commerce sites that merchandisers are not doing sort of generally that they maybe should be doing and that you're surprised? You know, is there any sort of simple things that you're noticing in general across the board on sites that you think they should be doing that they're not?
Some of the things that I am noticing or I'm aware of, some of them might not be obvious on sites, but I'm aware of from working with different clients, is, you know, spending time viewing their competition, certainly working more closely with marketing and inventory planning, because if they're responsible to produce margin goals on selling their profit, you know, what's the situation with inventory? What kind of marketing efforts are we doing as a company to support the product assortment? So I think, you know, avoiding silos as much as possible, but having marketing, inventory planning, merchandising, and of course, you know, the creative side of it, kind of all marching towards the same goals. I think that's a challenge sometimes. I think that another opportunity is for merchants to get more involved in the numbers and the data. You know, what is that saying? And understanding that a little bit more, as opposed, you know, getting up, not necessarily doing the science part of the job, but understanding the science part of the job. And certainly, probably the key that I don't see a lot of in many sites is developing exclusive / proprietary product. It's a reason for someone to buy from you than someone else. So those might be some opportunities out there.
Those are
that
great.
People are not doing or not doing enough of.
Right. Leslie, did you have anything to add to that? Or
I do, and I'm trying to figure out a nice way to say it, but I don't think there is a way, so I'm just going to put it out there that I think we've gotten kind of lazy in our product presentation. And I know that it's expensive to bring a style online, you know, to shoot it professionally and to show it in its best light. And especially if you're in apparel, you don't want to pay for models. But, you know, I really think that we've kind of let go of what is the absolute best product presentation that you can do visually, because overall what we're seeing is a real degradation, especially as our customers get more and more inundated with feeling that they have to have more SKUs and more availability, and the quality just keeps going down. And to Kathleen's point earlier about brand, it brings the whole brand down when your product isn't pretty, you know, and just taking that additional investment to be sure that you're putting your best foot forward is something that really seems to be slipping in the industry, and I'm not really sure why, but it's one of the best investments we can make.
I totally agree with you, because I particularly the comment that you make, Leslie, about apparel and having things shot on models. You know, the catalog industry was built up on showing environmental shots many times. And I think without having product on a model, and certainly that does not mean, you know, a form model, we're talking about a real live person, it creates kind of a wannabe. You know, I want to look like her. I want to look like him. And it really gives much more definition to how something will be looking on you. You know, it also is on a model that relates more to the in-store experience as well. You know, I want to try this on. I want to see how it looks on me.
Mm-hmm.
So I totally agree with your product presentation comment.
Yes, definitely. So it's sort of like the most basic things that people are not, you know, doing.
Right.
So another question has come in, and thanks, everybody, for starting to send in some questions. We really appreciate it. I'm just going to generally say it's kind of like the marriage between social media and merchandising. Do you have any best practices on how to use social media to improve or add on to your merchandising efforts? And this could be for either of you guys. But I don't know, Kathleen, why don't we start with you?
I would prefer if Leslie answers that question.
Okay.
I think she's probably more of an expert on that side of it.
Well, it's funny because it is.
I don't want to put you in a spot.
No, it's funny because a lot of people that work with me actually call me antisocial, and I'm not antisocial. It's more that I'm all about what we can monetize. You know,
we've been
kind of jumping on the social bandwagon, and we're all drinking the Kool-Aid, but at the end of the day, you know, does it pay off? And it does in two ways. One is it's a dialogue. I think that is one of the biggest misses that we see in social media. It's just not another way to push out a banner ad. You know, the idea of social media engagement is that you're creating a dialogue and saying, what do you think of this? You know, and so our customers that do the best with social media are the ones that are willing to have an open and fluid dialogue, even at a product level, and get feedback from the customers, which then creates, again, incredible loyalty and engagement because they want to share. You know, they don't want just another banner ad of your latest product, yawn. So, you know, I really think that one of the keys to social media is to get back to this idea that it is a two-way dialogue, and if you can't manage it and you can't staff accordingly to create a two-way relationship, then hold off and, you know, work in other channels.
Right. Let's see. Another question that came in that kind of is timely in terms of trends is mobile and, you know, I guess in general, merchandising on the mobile phone. This is a huge question, I'm sure, but how do you do it differently? And, you know, just in general, you know, when you think of mobile, how do you think of merchandising on a mobile phone? Either of you guys can answer.
Well, I mean, I can tell you that everybody knows that they need to play in the mobile playground. And it's really become this incredible whole other layer of complexity to how do we make it successful, especially when we're often paying to drive traffic to that. You know, fundamentally in terms of where we're at right now, people are still using mobile devices as a browsing device, which is one of the things that makes having an omni-cart or a cart that follows somebody so important as they move into a tablet or a desktop device. So when you're merchandising for someone to be doodling, you know, while standing in the Safeway line or, you know, waiting for somebody, really focus on what are the browsing top products that you have. You know, they're probably your new arrivals. They're your favorite styles. And to not be afraid to really prioritize the items that you think are most engaging, and your data will also tell you what's most engaging, and to lead with that so that when they are in a kind of a position or a format or a device which they're more likely to convert on, it's like, oh, of course I'm going to go back to that site. They had some really cute stuff, or I love this, or, wow, these new Williams Sonoma pants are really hot, and to go back and make that secondary purchase. So, you know, think of it as a soundbite, a subset, and lead with your very, very best and most intriguing.
Mm-hmm. I think it also, to your point, to add on to it, it really is almost kind of a call to action. You know, oh, this is cool. I need to check this out further, as opposed to actually purchase.
Great. We have one question that's kind of it's a specific question to a particular listener's company, but I think it could be a good broader question for the audience, and that is, how do you use merchandising to help, I guess, distinguish your brand? I mean, sometimes people sell two or three different things on a website, and they may be known for one of the things. So how are you able to, you know, use it to distinguish? I mean, one example I've seen is sort of companies that sell both to B2B and B2C, and they have like two different websites for the B2B person and others for the B2C person. I mean, are there any like best practices around that?
So I'm hearing two questions. So one is, you know, B2B versus B2C. That has a whole level of complexity when you're buying at a higher level of depth. And often that B2B customer is a little bit more sophisticated, not to step on any toes. But because of the level of buy, they're basing that purchase on a different level of buying decision. As it relates to essentially what you're talking about, brand or quality of product transfer, you know, that's when, kind of circling back to the basics of investing in some really nice photography, if they're coming in looking for one product, then show not only from a cross-selling, upselling perspective that this is something akin to some other similar products, but that it's part of a product family or a grouping or a kitting. So there's a value proposition that's transferred from, oh, I came in looking for this, they're known for this, but look at what they also have. So it's a transfer of value. Does that make sense?
I think so. I'm sure the listener that thinks as well. I mean, did you have anything to add, Kathleen, on that? Or
no, I think that makes entire sense. You know, I think what you have to try and avoid is that, you know, it doesn't look disconnected or helter-skelter, you know, that there's a reason for being. So the clearer you can be about that, the better, or the more segmented you can position it, the better. Because it's almost counterintuitive for a consumer to see a customer. It could be the example that I used before, you know, if you had a baking pan in the checkout cart, and then all of a sudden a pair of shoes popped up. Well, what's that all about? So I don't think you want to confuse the customer at all.
A lot of our attendees and listeners have been asking about, like, resources. You know, are there any, I don't even know what, think tanks or articles that come to the top of your head or sites where you can get a lot of this best practice stuff? I know, I'm sure Market Life, you guys have a lot of materials.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is there anything you guys, yeah.
Well, I would definitely recommend.
Go ahead, please, Kathleen.
I would definitely recommend Market Live. I do think that they have a lot of materials and talk a lot about best practices. I also think, at least from my perspective, I find Channel Advisor to be a really good resource. I also find Magento, which is an eBay company. They have good white papers or blogs or resources. So those are the three that come to mind, top of line.
And I think I already mentioned Paco Underhill's book, Why We Buy. I've had a number of teams that I've managed over the years read that and absolutely love it. And I think it creates a real context for getting out of our own way and really getting back to, okay, you know, here's what works. Here's what works in a physical environment. And then how am I now going to be able to do this online? Because this is, you know, to some extent, these are selling fundamentals that we that get lost with all this technology. And everyone that I've had read that book has just absolutely loved it and got a lot of value out of it.
Great. If we wanted to get that information, what would we do? Just check it out online or?
The Witch, the book?
Go to Amazon.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sorry, Amazon. Okay, right. I'm getting mixed up here. is following up. Is there a site, perhaps, that they could go to? I mean, does that book have, like, a site affiliated with it?
No, you have to get that paper thing that is becoming obsolete with printed words. They have to get one of those. Yeah, it's Why We Buy.
Amazon Prime, right. That's
Why We Buy. And it's it's Paco Underhill, UNDERILL.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I mean, I have to say, and that's not just because I work here at Market Live, is our writers here are phenomenal in terms of putting out tremendous amount of industry content. We have a whole department dedicated to finding the latest and greatest, and you can get that off of the Market Live website. And then if you sign up for the email, they'll actually send you the white papers before they show up on the site, and they do just an amazing job.
Cool. Let's see, we have time for maybe one more question. One of the listeners is asking about flash sales. You know, I know that's kind of a different subject, but I guess there is a merchandising component to them. Do you sort of see them as being in the future as a merchandising tool, I guess?
Absolutely, definitely. Because it comes down to that fundamental, what does it create? It creates a feeling of lack and urgency, you know, and that's something, whether it's feeling like there's a limited quantity or that your window is closing for you to be able to get it, or it's, you know, all these people that stand outside of Walmart on, you know, Cyber Monday thinking they're going to save $5 on a television. I mean, it really just has come down to this fundamental desire of, I want to get something that someone isn't going to get. Now, the one caveat to that, what I've seen works the best with flash sales is with products that have an innate, understood market position. So, you know, to do kind of a generic, flash sale on random chairs, you know, doesn't do it. But you say, you know, so-and-so is having a trunk show or, you know, 40% off, you know, XYZ brand, that has the pull to make a flash sale successful, something you can do directly on your site or you can propel it via email. But, you know, the two caveats to that is it really has to be something with a product with innate value.
Right.
Yeah, definitely. It has to be the right spot for it. So, okay, well, it looks like we're just about out of time. So thanks, everybody, for your questions. And ones that we haven't answered, we'll make sure to get we'll have them answered by our wonderful speakers. And any other questions that came in ahead of time, we'll also try to get those answered. So I just want to say, on behalf of Retail Online Integration and Market Live, I want to thank all of you for attending today's webinar. And be sure to check out our webinar page to get information on all of our archived and upcoming webinars. And if you could just take a minute to fill out the brief feedback survey that will appear on the screen next, we'd be really happy about that. Your feedback will influence the webinars we bring to you in the future. So with that, I hope to see you all at the next Retail Online Integration webinar. Have a great day.